This episode of the Walk On Mentality podcast is brought to you by Goodwill Provisions. Are you ready to take your health and wellness journey to the next level? If so, look no further than Goodwill Provisions, your partner in holistic, athletic nutrition. Goodwill believes that true well-being encompasses more than just physical fitness. It's about nurturing your mind, body, and soul to achieve peak human performance. Their provisions range from the mushroom-powered Dawn Patrol superfoods, which go perfect in your morning coffee or post-workout smoothie, to whey protein, creatine, and even CoQ10 to help you stay focused and energized throughout the day. As part of the Walk On Mentality community, you get an exclusive perk. Head over to goodwillprovisions.com to explore their offerings and treat yourself to a healthier journey. Use code MENTALITY at checkout and you'll unlock a fantastic 15% off your order. Thanks for supporting the podcast, and I can't wait to hear what you think about the supplements. Remember, no limits. If you're like me, you like to train hard. And if you train hard, it's incredibly important that you take the time to prioritize rest and recovery so that you can come back better. And one of the ways I set myself up to come back better is by rocking the Kane Revive. The Kane Revive is designed to stimulate recovery from the ground up, created for moments of athletic transition, made to support and renew the feet before and after workouts. Kane is made with Bounce Back Foam, a breakthrough biofoam created from sustainable Brazilian sugar cane. The shoes are odor and bacteria resistant, quick drying, and ultra durable. They were developed in partnership with Dr. Daniel Geller, an authority in the treatment of foot and ankle injuries in elite runners, cyclists, and triathletes. Head to the link in the show notes to support the Walk On Mentality podcast and get yourself a pair. Come back better. Are you tired of feeling like your clothes are too tight, uncomfortable, or never your size? What about feeling like you never have the right apparel for the various occasions that you're doing on a month-to-month basis? At the end of the day, you look good, you feel good, and you feel good, you play good. And that's in every area of your life. And if that resonates with you, look no further. I'd like to introduce you to the Roan Commuter Collection. Roan's Commuter Collection is flexible and breathable. There's a product for every occasion. Mobility is everything, and it makes looking good easy. Not to mention, with Gold Fusion anti-odor technology, you never have to worry about your pits reeking. If any of that resonated with you, then my friend, you are in the right place. The Commuter Collection can get you through any workday and straight into whatever comes next. So head to roan.com/mentality and use promo code MENTALITY to save 20% off your entire order. That's 20% off your entire order when you head to rhone.com/mentality and use code MENTALITY. It's time to find your office comfort. What's up, everybody? This is your host, Jackson Mitchell, and we are back with another episode of the Walk On Mentality podcast. This week in the studio, we have the honor of sitting across from Mr. Gabe Fuentes. Gabe, I appreciate you joining me, brother.
Of course, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah, super excited to get into your story. It's a story of resilience, consistency, commitment to the process, commitment to a goal. And so I'm excited to give you a platform to share. And just to kick it off, I'd love to get to know you a little bit better, man. So where did the journey begin? Where are you from?
Yeah, so I'm born and raised here in Austin, Texas, Sierra Park to be exact. And, you know, growing up, man, always into sports and really athletic growing up. And out of high school, I suffered like an ACL tear. And so that kind of held me back from going to the Coast Guard, which a few years later I ended up going to. Did the Coast Guard for about 6 years during that time. Still really, really big into CrossFit and running and powerlifting. And, you know, just trying to be as athletic as I possibly could. I just, being in the military and being around those guys and it's fun, man. You know, they really pushed you to, you know, just be competitive and stay healthy. So shortly before I got out of the military, I was scrolling on YouTube and I found this guy named Nick Bear, and I had no idea who he was. But this guy was about to take on an Ironman in Florida, and just, I don't know, there's something about the video that I was just like so captivated by. And so obviously watched the video and I was like, seemed pretty cool, pretty inspiring. Started doing a little research on him, realized he had his own like supplement company. And so they got me, I bought a tub of Fruity Pebble protein and found it to be delicious. and realized that they're from Round Rock, Texas, which is like right down the road from me. And so, I just fell in love with VPN.
Yeah. So if we back up to, you growing up, prior to even going to the military, I mean, what was your childhood like? What, were your parents doing for work? How did you come to decide that you wanted to join the military?
Yeah. So I had a pretty interesting childhood. So I'm the youngest of six. So three boys, three girls, three of us, including myself, were adopted. And so being adopted has always been a pretty unique area in my life. So blessed for the family I have. I absolutely love them and couldn't ask for anything else. But there's the other side of like a lot of anger in my life that I still like deal with and get frustrated with, even at 29, still something I deal with. My mom was a teacher. My dad was a police officer. They divorced when I was pretty young. So kind of had the traditional every weekend go to my dad's house, but, great, great parents and great role models for me. And, I have two older brothers who are identical twins. Not really sure what I'd be without those guys as far as just what they've taught me and just how much they've, led by example. Great, good childhood and just a really, really great family. So,
yeah. So yeah. You mentioned an ACL tear. Were you playing sports or how did that injury happen?
And that's a story I'm not super proud of because it's not that exciting. We were, I was at like a church camp, man, and we were playing soccer and my buddy tossed, passed me the ball and I stepped on it and just fell forward and heard the pop and wasn't sure what happened. And then, hobbled to my car and the next morning I woke up and was borderline in tears out of pain. And when he got checked and it was a complete tear of the ACL. So a few months later I had surgery and they put you in a brace and you can't move your knee and you the whole rehab process. But the thing that was pretty detrimental to me at the time, because my plan was to go in the Coast Guard right out of high school. Having a father in law enforcement, my brother has been a paramedic for years and years and years, and tons of family members in the military. I think that's just something that I naturally just attracted to. And another reason why I wanted to do the military is because I think I have such a big family. A lot of people went to school, and I just complained about debt and all the student loans, and I was like, man, like I don't really want to do that route.
Right.
And they're like, military will pay for it. I was like, are you kidding me? Let's do that. So tearing my ACL definitely got held me back a few years, but I moved down to Corpus Christi out of high school. And that was a really, really good time for me. I got super involved with the church down there and really, really plugged in with the community and just really grew a lot as an individual, still doing CrossFit pretty heavily and running pretty heavily. And then kind of just working and rehabbing. So,
yeah. So what did you do for work in that 2 year time frame? You mentioned it took a couple of years for you to actually get back to the Coast Guard. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, you can imagine nothing too, impressive. I worked at a couple of restaurants, and I worked for, a security company that they did provide security for a mall. Say mall cop, whatever. But they would also do security for like restaurants and stuff like that. And that was a pretty, pretty cool job for me. Being a security officer or whatever, you get exposure to all kinds of personalities. And I think that was a really good thing to have prior to going into the military and prior to, other things that I'd have to deal with in life. So, yeah.
And so you were down in Corpus for 2 years and you have the security jobs. And then at what point did you decide, like, now I'm going to go back to pursue the Coast Guard? And what was that process like?
Yeah, so I think for me, like, I got really, like I said, I got really involved in Corpus. And there were a couple moments where I was like, man, maybe I don't want to do the Coast Guard. Maybe I want to go, like, be a pastor, and maybe I want to go and do something else. But my Coast Guard recruiter was out of Corpus. And I think for me, you hit a point where you realize in life, like, you need to go do something. You want to go do something bigger and better, and you want to keep growing. And I just knew for me, like, I didn't want to be stuck in Corpus. And I wanted to go and explore the world and see, like, whatever, what the world had to offer. And so just continuing to talk to my recruiter and get things kind of squared away. I took the ASVAB. Took me 3 times to finally pass that test. And so I think once I finally passed it, I moved back to my mom's house for 4 to 5 months. Was working at another restaurant job, kind of while we waited. But when I went to MEPS is the medical exam portion of getting into the military. I failed, like, the hearing test, which, well, I was this it was total, like, shocker. I wasn't expecting that at all, and so I had to go back 4 times and get a
Wow.
special waiver from, like, some doctor in DC. And so that, again, that kind of, like, put, hindered the process. And but yeah, I mean, we finally went December 15th of 2015. Finally got my shipment date and headed off to Cape May, New Jersey for 2 months.
And what is the, you said the ASVAB test?
Yeah, so it's the vocational aptitude. And so it's your math, your English, your reading, your problem solving. Every branch of the military has this. And so based on your score, basically depend it ba like there's a minimum to get in every branch, right? So let's say, like, Army is like 30 and the Air Force maybe like 40. Coast Guard, I think, was like 30. But the higher score you get, it allows you to get certain jobs in the military. And so that's why, so it's like I passed every time, but for the job that I was wanting to get, I needed, like, a higher score. And I've just never been a na I've naturally just, like, never been a good test taker. And so, like, that was definitely, like, a lot more challenging than I anticipated, obviously.
Yeah, and what was that job that you were shooting for at the time?
So I was trying to become originally I wanted to do AMT, which is aviation maintenance technician. So they're, like, the mechanics of, like, the helicopters and planes. And then I think that score was like a 50 or a 60, and I couldn't get it. And so then I realized, like, man, I don't want to do that. I kind of want to be a boatswain's mate. I kind of want to drive boats for Coast Guard. Like, that sounded really cool. And so we ended up kind of moving forward with that job, actually. So,
Yeah, what
yeah.
was the process like of, maybe not necessarily failing because you said you passed, but like taking the test, not getting the score you wanted, taking the test, not getting the score you wanted, and how did you continue to stay persistent and not give up on that goal ultimately of getting into the Coast Guard?
Yeah, so I think a good thing for me, and I'm such a firm believer in this, even to this day, it's just the practice of accountability. I think having people or things in your life to hold you accountable is super, super important. Failing those tests every single time sucked. It was not fun because it meant that I had to stay there, another month to try and retake it again. But having, like, my recruiter, just, not be harsh with me, just saying, hey, man, this happens, this is normal, like, let's get together, let's study, let me help you, and just kind of be that supportive person to encourage me and keep me motivated. Because I mean, do when you fail at anything, it's so easy to lose that motivation and be like, eh, whatever. you know, humans are we're the greatest at telling ourselves lies and then us believing them. So I think having an accountability person like him really, really helped me get through just passing that test and then, you know, making it to boot camp, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. And so you said you were in Jersey. Is that right?
So boot camp is 2 months in Cape May, New Jersey. So then you go from there, and then Coast Guard's a little different than your other branches, to where like other branches, you graduate boot camp and then you go straight to like your MOS, like your job, right? You go to that school. Coast Guard goes boot camp out into the fleet as what's called a non-rate.
Mm-hmm.
And then while you're there for, you know, however long, you can see all the jobs and then you'll put your name on a school list and then you'll go to a school, if that makes sense. So for me, I went from Cape May for boot camp to Key West on a ship for a year, which is awesome, but tough work.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, Virginia to become a bosun's mate. And then Virginia, I spent 2.5 years in like Maine, New Hampshire at a small boat station.
Wow. So you were kind of all over the Northeast during that period of time.
All over. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
How was it? Two questions come to mind for me. One is simply, you know, how was it rehabbing from that knee and then going into a job that certainly requires a lot of, you know, physical fitness and ability. And then the other is just, you know, growing up in Austin, Texas, Cedar Park, spending your whole life in that area. What was it like for you to be, you know, far, far away from home for an extended period of time?
Yeah. So I'll touch on the ACL real quick. I think ACL wasn't that. By the time I went to boot camp, I mean, I was 100% back to normal. Mm-hmm. I had rehab pretty hard and, you know, just how much CrossFit I was doing in Corpus and running. And, it was, I felt back to normal, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a huge concern with that. Growing up, I think in Austin and Cedar Park specifically, definitely pretty sheltered as a kid. Yeah. I was homeschooled up till freshman year of high school. And I think being somewhat sheltered and going to boot camp and then going to an operational ship and having people from all walks of life, you know, I mean, my bed was, it was like, I don't know, 6x3. It was super, super small. There's 30 of us in a room. And just, you know, just guys being crazy. it was a culture shock. It was an absolute culture shock. And I'll admit, I mean, when I was on that ship, I wasn't meeting the requirements. You know, it took me a while to finally like meet the requirement of working hard.
Yeah, tell me more about what do you mean
to that magic. I mean, like the boot camp. Like boot camp is like boot camp sucks. It's not fun. It's very structured, you know. And like it's for them, it's more about like attention to detail, right? But the nice thing about boot camp is you're on a set schedule. Hey, I know, like, hey, I gotta do this, I gotta do that by this time. When you go out into the actual fleet, like, there's a schedule, there's a workday schedule, but like, what if you got a drug boat at 2 a.m.? Guess what? Now you're up, and then you roll back into your like fire watch, you know? And so it's like, you're just sleep deprived for like 2 months at a time. And so you're doing all this stuff and then you're just chipping paint, you're painting stuff. And then you're going like, you know, launching a boat and then like a helicopter comes in. So you're going to do like a helo tie down. And then you got a drug boat you're chasing, and so it's just like nonstop. And I think for me, like I don't know if I was just lazy or I just couldn't get in the groove. Dude, there was a day, and I'll never forget this day because it absolutely changed me. And dude, there was a day where like five guys that took me into like the bosun's locker, and essentially that's like where we keep all of our paint and our chains and everything. And they basically circled around me and they were like, you're not cutting it. Like, you need to, you know, get your shit together. Like, you need to like fix it. And I don't know what about that changed me, but dude, I've never been the same since. That was, I think, a moment where I realized, like, all right, like, this sucks. This is hard, but like, yeah, keep on keeping on. You know, like, life's gonna be tough. We're gonna get after it. It's gonna, you know, it's gonna end, and we're just gonna keep going.
Yeah.
So that moment in particular, really projected, like, I think, like, how I am now as a person, and you know, how I was moving forward. So,
how many years in was that?
A year.
Dude, it's really interesting to hear you tell that story, because you already alluded to it once in the beginning around the importance of that accountability and having somebody. Mm-hmm. When you were walking through your test, you had your recruiter saying, like, hey man, like, this happens, but you got to keep going, like, you got to get it done. Now you have another context where, you know, I don't know the proper terminology, but like, your peers, your colleagues are saying, like, yo, if you want to be here, like, there's a certain level that's required and you're not meeting it. And that's that same thing. That's that accountability. You know, I think a lot of people like the idea of doing stuff on their own. But the reality is, like, no matter what it is, it's a lot better when you got a team around you, a support crew, and that's in entrepreneurship, like your physical fitness journey, obviously relationships, family, like, just in every context. And then the other thing too is, like, you mentioned, well, we talked about this a little bit before, but you learned about attention to detail and accountability in that time frame, and that has, you know, been something that you carried with you well beyond your years of service, and that was just in year one. So
yeah,
I would love to hear more about your experience in the military, and, you know, after having that moment of kind of like a come to Jesus moment, like, I got to make some changes. What was the remainder of your military career like, and what were some of the lessons that you learned from your time serving?
Yeah, and one thing I will say too, you're talking about like peers and like accountability. I think so many times in life, a lot of people are really sensitive these days, and constructive criticism, I think, is so important. Because those guys, like, what they were saying wasn't nice. It was really, really harsh. It was very aggressive, and it wasn't like, hey Gabe, like, you know, you need to do better. It's like, you know, like, they were swearing at me and yelling at me. And the thing is, like, I'll never forget that, because it's like, damn, like, I'm causing these guys like so much frustration. Like, I need to get my shit together. Mm-hmm. Like, I need to, like, I need to make some changes so that this is never going to happen again. And so to answer your question about how that kind of changed me going forward, I changed so much. I think my work ethic, I've always had, I think, a really, really good work ethic, but like, I think it really projected me forward to work hard, because I don't ever want to be that person that like people can't depend on. What I was doing when I was in New England, it was primarily, so it's a heavy weather station. So in the Coast Guard, you have three levels of small boat stations. So you have a regular small boat station, you have a heavy weather station, and then you have what's called a surf station. All three of those have a certain level of like degree that they can operate in. So like a normal station, like max their like boat can go is like 10 foot mm-hmm. waves. Then you go to like a heavy weather station, like max you can operate is like 25, 30, which is, dude, if you're thinking a 30 foot wave, it's
yeah, that's insane.
a surfman though, they're a real like select breed, and they are specifically trained a special unit. And dude, they'll take boats in like 50 foot waves. But I mean, they're the best boat drivers in the world. And so I was the middle one at a heavy weather station. And being at a heavy weather station in Maine, New Hampshire, like, attention to detail is so important, because if you don't attention to detail, like you'll die.
Right.
Like you absolutely, you have a boat in tow, dude, at 2 o'clock in the morning during a freaking snowstorm, and you don't put that runner on that bit, and it snaps, you're dead.
Yeah.
Like things like that, you know, you're harnessed in, you miss your clip, or, you know, you have the training, he forgets the clip in, you take a rogue wave and he goes throwing off, and, you know, water's 40 degrees and it's 2 o'clock in the morning.
Dead.
So again, the severity of the things that we were doing up there, a lot of it I do contest like that moment on when I was in Key West, you know, it taught me how to be strong. It taught me how to be, you know, strong mentally. It taught me how to take criticism. It taught me how to give criticism, you know, and not in a mean way, but like, it taught me like, hey, like you gotta be assertive with people because there's a severity of it. So yeah, I grew a ton from that original conversation.
Yeah. And so you said you spent 6 years in. So at what point in time did you determine that you wanted to get out, and what kind of led you to make that decision?
Yeah. So I signed a 4-year contract for active duty. And it was a leadership issue, towards the end. I kind of wanted to stay in. I was really enjoying where I was at, what I was doing. But my higher ups were not supportive of people at my rank driving boats. They wanted kind of the higher rank guys to do it, but they wouldn't. There's kind of a lot of like issues with our higher ups, and so I kind of resorted back to like my original plan was, hey, let's do four, let's get out, we'll go to college, you know, at least have the benefits of the military. And so I kind of went back to that. That's what I did. You know, I signed the papers to get out. And I actually then transferred to the reserves, active reserves. And so, and I kind of did that more as a buffer. Just, I wasn't really sure what I was going to do next. You know, I started doing some classes at the local community college here. Still having no idea what I wanted to do. Started venturing into like the real estate world, started thinking about doing like boat sales, like in like Florida. Mm-hmm. Fun fact about me, I'm obsessed with wine. I really love wine. I started studying for a couple certifications in the Coast Guard, and so I was like, man, maybe, you know, maybe go work at a vineyard or
sommelier.
So I started my level one. And so I was just like, I didn't really know what I wanted to be honest. But I knew I wanted the Coast Guard to still be like a cushion in case I decided to go back. And that's why I did the reserves. And so 1 week in a month, 2 weeks out of the year, I go down to Port O'Connor. There's a Coast Guard station down there, and kind of just drill and maintain all my certifications, and then, you know, kind of back to work. So I did that for a little bit. I ended up worked at a hotel in Austin as an expo in a restaurant. Absolutely hated it because there's no structure at that place. And coming, you know, from a lot of structure, a lot of attention to detail to, you know, people who have been working in restaurants their entire time, don't have any integrity. And I was like, this is not for me. So left there, started working for a company doing fulfillment for them. And they were a small company that was doing like bacteria testing on like compressed air, mm-hmm. which is a real niche field, but started working there for a while. And then I saw the beautiful post that BPN made, and they said they were hiring for fulfillment in their warehouse. And I knew if I would absolutely beat myself up if I didn't try.
Right.
So we sent a resume in and got the interview, and the rest is history.
Yeah. What advice would you give to, you know, somebody who is transitioning out of the military, or maybe is fresh out, who is kind of trying to figure out how to transfer their skill set into corporate America or maybe a business venture. I was just having a conversation with a guy the other day who he just got out, and he was telling me that, like, you know, he was trying to figure out how his skills could transfer. And so obviously you found a way. What advice would you give to somebody in those shoes?
Yeah, so it's so nerve-wracking. It's so nerve-wracking getting out of the military, and I totally get it, because you're leaving security, right? You know your meal's gonna be at the end of the day, you know your paycheck, you know you got a house. There's so many benefits in the military that they provide to members. And so you're essentially leaving that and going out to this like wide open world where you don't know what, you know, you don't know the jobs, you don't know like what's out there. But the most difficult thing, and to this day, I still very much struggle with this, is you cannot be and act in the military like you in the civilian world.
Mm-hmm.
The way you act and the way you hold yourself and the way you talk in the military, you can't do that in the civilian world, because people are going to lose their mind. And dude, it's so hard. I still struggle with it with this, like, to this day. But like, to your friend or to someone who is getting out, I would say just give it time. You know that there's no rush to jump into a whole new career. Like, go and kind of acclimate, you know, go explore, go see, like, try other jobs. You know what I mean? Like, people who, like, are honorably separated from the military, like, there's a ton, you know, VA has stuff for you, your VA loan, you got, you know, there's disability if you need it. There's the GI Bill. GI Bill is an incredible thing, right? I'm in school right now. And you get a lot of money for going to school. And that should be great to set you up for whatever future endeavors you want to do. So I would just say, just be patient, you know, just don't feel rushed to do anything. Just kind of go and explore.
Yeah, it's interesting. You said the military has all these great benefits, and it sounds like you're very much taking advantage of them. We had a saying when I was playing college football that was use football, don't let football use you. And I think it's kind of the same thing. Like, you know, your military, your service, like, that's your career, and you should 100% do it to the best of your ability. But also, like, take advantage of some of those awesome opportunities that the military presents you with. I mean, you know, I was very fortunate to have my mom served 26 years, retired as a lieutenant colonel from the Air Force. And my pops also served 4 years in the Army, put himself through college that way. And so, you know, I as a kid have been able to, like, or excuse me, I as a child of my parents reaped some of the benefits of them serving. And so totally, like, utilize those resources. So yeah, let's keep going, man. Cause now we're getting more into a lot of the meat in the story. I'm really excited to talk more about. So obviously, anybody who is familiar with BPN is familiar with the level of, you know, endurance and running and fitness, really just fitness in general, that company promotes. And so I would imagine that working there, you really were involved in training and lifting and all the things. So talk a little bit about, you know, what led you to want to take on an ultra marathon.
Yeah. So definitely, I think working at BPN, it's a blessing and a curse for sure. I think the blessing is the blessing of being at BPN, man, is that you're surrounded by just so many like-minded people, and you truly are, you know, motivated every day by, you know, whether it's the guys being like, "Yo, you working out today?" And you're like, I'm working out today," you know, or just seeing the work ethic that people there and how passionate they are to be there. And, you know, every person who starts at BPN, I love it, because I'm like, I know exactly how you feel. Because when I started, I was in absolute disbelief that I got to do this every day. And I still have many days like that where I'm like, dude, this is awesome that I get to do this. And the growth of the company is just, it's so exciting to watch. I think the the cons of VPN is that it's very, very easy to get stuck in. I'm sure I say this sound, not sound bad. It's very easy to get stuck in like the day to day and like, you know, all the exciting stuff, when sometimes I think you need to step back and just take a step back and kind of reevaluate everything that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I say that because I think like VPN is very, very big in social media, you know, and you get on social media and you start getting to get algorithms and, you know, it's like, it's running and it's, you know, eating clean, which, you know, using our products, all amazing stuff, not discrediting any of that. But I think when that's all you consume, for me, I've noticed that like I'm getting like really, really hard on myself, mm-hmm. really, really hard on myself, because I ran like 3 or 4 days and I'm like, oh, man, like, you know, this person just ran 10, this person just ran 20. And it's like, they're doing their own thing, but it's so easy to like start beating myself up because I work there. Like, people follow me. Like, I'm a representation of the brand. Like, do people not think I'm about the? And it's like, dude, Gabe, you're chill.
Right.
You're a full-time college student. You got a full-time job. You have a girlfriend. You got like, chill. And so that's the only thing con I would say. It's just like, it's very easy to get caught up in like all the media and all the hype, you know, but it's okay to take a step back and, you know.
Yeah.
Reflect.
Everybody's on their own journey, man. And I think, you know,
100%.
Social media in general, like, take VPN out of the equation. It's like, no matter what you see on social media, like, that's somebody else sharing that, and that might be their reality, and it might be a facade of their reality, and it might, like, literally the reality is, like, and this is from my perspective, especially with my podcast, like, social media is a great tool to market a business or to build a community or brand, etc. But like, beyond that, there's not always a ton of value in it. And so you definitely do got to be careful with that. And so would you say that is what kind of made you sign up for an ultra?
What got me to do an ultra, man, like, it was Nick, honestly. And I think working at VPN and dude, like, just seeing his work ethic, not only with fitness, but just like as a business owner and an entrepreneur and a CEO, like, that's one thing. And I've never seen someone work harder in my entire life. And then on the fitness level, it's insane. And I know, I mean, he's big in social media, right? That's his bread and butter. But what I saw him do while he wasn't recording, you know, I come in at 5 o'clock to go, you know, hit an early morning workout, and he's in there like biking, you know, where you go after work and he's, you know, I do a weight session. He's still, I mean, he worked so hard. And so he honestly was my inspiration for kind of wanting to pursue it. I watched him do Leadville. I remember going watching the team who'd done the documentary for him and just being so inspired, because although it's a film, like, I know how hard Nick worked to get there. Cause he trained at HQ every day and I saw it all the time. And so I kind of made a decision that, like, you know, I want to do like an ultra. And so I had actually gone and done, it's called Zion at Night. It's half marathon in Zion National Park. And I flew out there at 6 a.m. from Austin and landed in San Francisco, and then from San Francisco to Nevada, got a rental car, like, all in a day, and got to the start like 5 minutes before the start. And so I remember I got out, I like threw some geo in my vest, like took a photo with the bathroom, and like went off. Mm-hmm. Like, dude, no stretching, like nothing. I just drove there and went.
Good.
And it was one of the most beautiful races I've ever done, man. I mean, the sunset in Zion, and it was incredible. But that race like wrecked me. I was not prepared to run trail or rocks or anything. I've been running around the neighborhood. So I finished that race. I came back. Nick was then training for the Rocky 100, Rocky Rocky 100. And some people that I work with, they were going to do the 100K. And I was like, that's what I'm going to do. Like, not only would be an honor to run a race that Nick's doing also, but like, I want to go like test my limits. I want to go, like, I want to train. I want to go see what I can do.
Right.
And so we signed up for that race, and dude, like, it was so incredible. I was running so much. I was down to like 197, which, dude, I've not broken. I didn't break 210 like ever. And I was at 197, and I was the healthiest that I had been, the healthiest that I felt. Like, I just felt so good. And so while I was training on a ton of these training runs, I started noticing I was having these like weird, like vision, like episodes where like, I thought maybe it was like vertigo, but like almost, I couldn't really tell like, you know, how far the tree was in front of me or like, but, and I was like, oh, you know, whatever. You know, it only lasts like 30 seconds or so, a minute. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Because once it would happen, it would go. I was good for the day. As time went on, the days, the weeks, they start becoming like more and more aggressive, to the point where like they'd be at random. I'd be driving, and I couldn't even tell you how far the car was in front of me. And I was like, I don't know what's going on.
Right.
I'm a very, very stubborn person, and I was kind of like blowing it off. I'm like, whatever, man. It's probably like dehydration or like the crystals in my ears. I'm not thinking anything serious, but went to my family doctor. He had me go to like a neurologist. They ordered like a brain scan. Went and saw like a PT for vertigo, and she said, "No, you're good." Not thinking anything of it. It was a Wednesday morning. It was 2 days before Rocky. And it was, you know, 3:50, 10 minutes before I got off work, get a phone call. And there was a nurse, and she's just like, "Hey, like, is this Gabe?" And I was like, "Yep." Like, "Hey, what's up?" You know, it's for, I'm trying to go home. I'm like, "What's up?" And she's like, "Hey, like, do you mind like sitting down real quick? I need to tell you something." And like, I remember feeling like pretty confused. I was like, "Sit down. Like, what do you mean? Like, yeah. Sit down." And she's like, "I just need you to sit down. Like, I just have something really important to tell you." And I was like, "Say it. Like, what's up?" And she's like, "Hey, I just wanted to let you know, like, your test results are back. There's a 2.5 centimeter mass on your brain." And I've never experienced shock. Like, I didn't know what shock was
right
until that moment. And I went from being ready, you know, a normal day to like all over the place emotionally. I walked out, my boss at the time, like, he was walking past me, and I motioned him over, and I told him, and he just goes, "Oh shit." And I was like, "Yeah." And so I walk out the front door of BPN, and there's just a moment that I think is just like, man, God, I think it was just like, this, you know, this person needs to be here at this time for this reason. Because I walk out the door, and Nick is always with people because he's always, you know, he's running a business, and so he's always with, you know, media people or finance people. He's just always a busy person. And I walk out, and he's by himself walking across, and I go, "Hey, like, I need to talk to you." And he's like, "What's up?" So we go in his office, and I tell him. He just goes, "Oh shit." I go, "Yeah." And he's like, "You know, whatever you need, like, we're here for you. We're gonna support you 100% through this. You know, like, don't, you know, you're not losing your job or anything of that nature. Like, we, you know, we want to support you as much as we can through this. You know, just let me know what you need, keep me updated." And he said, he said two things that I will also never forget. He says, don't overthink anything and don't Google anything. And I'll never forget those because A, I didn't Google anything, but B, I overthought everything.
Right.
And so I remember, you know, I was driving home, which I really shouldn't have driven. I was not in a mental state. And I called my mom and I was at a red light and I was just punching my steering wheel as hard as I could. I was so angry. And I talked to my sister and I was just like, so sad, just all over the place. And this was on a Thursday. So I called the doctors, you know, Friday to be like, you know, what does this mean? Is this, I think I'm dying. Honestly, I'm like, I'm dying.
Right.
And because they, until you do another MRI with contrast and they do more results, they can't really tell you exactly what's going on. But the thing is, like, you know, now it's Friday and they're like, yep, let's do an MRI on Monday. And I'm like, you want me to spend an entire weekend after telling me that, just like twiddling my fingers, wondering if I'm going to wake up in the morning? Like, looking back at it, I understand why they can't do that. But at that moment, I was like, I'm not going to sleep because I don't know if I'm going to wake up,
right?
Honestly. And so I had an MRI with contrast, and I was supposed to meet with oncology that following week, and then the neurosurgeon. And when I found out I had a scheduled appointment with a neurosurgeon, I was, you're like, what do you mean neurosurgeon? They're like, well, you know, just in case we can't do, like, you know, radiation. I was like, all right. Well, for you being from Texas, you understand when it gets cold, we are wusses. And that week we had a micro, little flurry storm, little snowstorm that shut everything down. Mm-hmm. So all my appointments got pushed a week. But neuro got pushed a month.
Oh, man.
Just how, you know, how it worked. And so I basically, like, went from, like, thought I was good to now I went a whole new month to talk to oncology and neuro. And so that first month was, like, brutal. Finally had the appointments with oncology, finally met the neurosurgeon, and I remember being in the office and he's like, if you're gonna meet a neurosurgeon, they're a very unique person. They're so smart, and you want to be smart, and you kind of want to be a little weird because that just tells you that they're just really smart, and they don't, you know, they're not really social people, man. They're just worried about the books. And so this guy was just like real nonchalant. He's like, yeah, we're going in there. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, we're going to go in there. And I was like, okay. Like, you say it. And so essentially what was happening was, I don't remember the medical verbiage, but where the tumor was on my head, it was pressing up against, like, the vision area of my brain. And so whenever my brain was getting stimulated, it was causing me to have seizures in my eyes.
Oh, my
and so
God.
I would lose all depth perception for around 30 seconds to a minute. And that's what they were. It wasn't vertigo or like vertigo or, you know, other stuff. It was like their seizures. And when I realized that, I was like, it made sense. You know, I was happy I finally had an answer. So he scheduled the surgery for a month later, on March 31st of 2022. But before that month leading up to the surgery, I fell into an incredibly, like, deep state of depression. Mm-hmm. I would, at the time, I was still in, like, fulfillment at BPN, and I mean, on the daily, I would wear a hoodie and I would go and sit on the bathroom floor and I would cry and I would, you know, put my hoodie up and I'd go back and pack orders and I would do it for a few more hours and then I'd go do it again and I would come home and, you know, I'd sit on the couch and I'd play video games and I would go sit in my bed and I'd look at the reviews of the neurosurgeon for the, you know, 20th time and, you know, I would wonder if I was in wait. I mean, dude, the hardest thing about this entire, that whole situation, I think, was like you don't think about how important your brain is, because like your brain is who you are, right? And so when you hear that the thing that makes you who you are is tampered with, it really starts like rechecking a lot of things in your life. And I think like I really felt like I was truly putting my life in someone else's hands, because in my mind, like I mean, I was like, I was trusting someone to go in there and do what they needed to do and not kill me. But there was a night that was it's a pretty impactful point, I think, of my story and this whole story. There was a night in particular, and it was a Saturday night, and it was cold and it was rainy, and it was just your classic situation. I've been drinking a tremendous amount and incredibly depressed, and I felt like I was a burden on people. I felt like I was a burden on my friends and my family especially. I felt like the burden on my mom, and my siblings. And I have, at the beginning of our conversation, I mentioned I was adopted. I have a huge folder of just adoption paperwork and stuff like that. So in the midst of all this, I thought it'd be a good idea to bust that open,
Yeah,
which is
not a good
not
idea.
a good cocktail at all. And I stumbled upon a page, and it was something my birth mom had written about my birth dad, and it basically said like birth father wanted abortion due to too many children already with different moms. Worst thing I could have read ever. And I read that, dude, and I was like that was like the answer. Like, cool, I'm not supposed to be here. I'm burden on people. I'm not, you know. And dude, and I think I've said this before, and it's truly how I felt. Like, what scared me the most in that whole situation is like I wasn't scared. Like, I wasn't scared. I was not scared to kill myself. I wasn't scared to not be here. It didn't worry me. And I think that's where like what freaked me out. But in the midst of all that, like, I went and grabbed my gun, sitting on the floor, had the binder in front of me. I had literally whiskey next to me, had my cig next to me. And I'm just sitting there, and someone like knocks on my door. It's like literally 2 a.m. Someone knocks on my door, and trying to cry. It's my older brother Tim. And essentially what happened was I was talking a little crazy to my older sister, and she had called him, and I mean, he came flying, you know, from South Austin, and you know, like truly, truly saved me. It's a moment that I'll never forget, for A, being how low I was in life, but just the moment that we shared together, and him understanding. Like, he was just like, dude, I'm so sorry. Like, I didn't know how much you were going through, or like, I didn't know you had this binder with all the stuff in it. Like, you should never have to deal with this. And so that was that night.
I want to pause you just for a second.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just because, man, I think that is another just such a clear example of the value of not walking through anything alone. Like,
Yeah.
people never know what you're going through unless you tell them. And you know, by all measures of what your family saw, what your friends saw, like, yeah, they knew that you had this brain tumor that you were going to have surgically removed, but like, you know, by all the measures, it's like you've got a great job, you enjoy the work that you do, you've got a girlfriend, like you have a roof over your head, like, you know, by all measures, you're fine. And it wasn't until you know, let him in, so to speak, that your brother could actually support you. And it's like, especially as men, we will push off all the support we possibly can, even when we do need it. But like, there's so much value in just opening yourself up to actually receive that support. And man, I'm, you know, by the grace of God, Tim showed up and you're still here. So
Yeah.
keep going though.
Truly thankful and a true blessing. But I will say, I think for men specifically, like, that is something I think it's very, very tough for us. You know, we're the fixers of all, and you know, I mean, for me, like, I don't like help. I don't want people worrying about me. Like, I want to help others. And I think I've naturally always been like that, you know, it's okay to ask for help. And it's okay to not be okay. You know, and I know we naturally just push things down and move on, but like, at some point, like, it's okay to share with other people. So I definitely encourage our people who are struggling with stuff to talk to people, honestly.
Sure.
So moving past that night, March 31st came, and you know, early morning arrival to the hospital, and you know, they start you change your gown, and you start talking to the anesthesia, and the neuro doctor comes in, and I have my mom and, you know, my two sisters and my brother there, and my dad showed up a little bit later, and they put you in like the pre-op room, I guess, and you sign like paperwork that basically says like, if you die, like, you can't sue us, like, you're signing like stuff like that. You gotta sign like, you know, if you die, like, you know, your mom has like responsibility, your body, like, just like, you're like, how about we not do any of this stuff,
right?
And so they give you tons of like IVs and all kinds of needles and stuff. The very, very first one I had, she missed the vein.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know this, but if you miss, you can't try again. You have to go get another nurse to do it. And so she was like, hey, unfortunately I missed, like, someone else can come do it. And I just remember thinking, no, I could start.
Right.
We're not having issues off the rip. And so came in, taught anesthesia, and I was sitting there like with my family in like a little pre-op room. And again, there's so many moments in this story that they're just ingrained in my head. I'll never forget. And that moment is a big one, because I was like, I'm about to go under, and I don't know, A, if I'm waking up, but B, how I'm going to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And so just kind of hold my mom's hand and my sister's hand and gave them a hug, and, you know, they roll you back there, and I was pretty sedated, but I wasn't so sedated that I forgot that I had to put myself on the operating table.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember going into this massive room, and I shimmy myself off the gurney onto this, like, you know, steel operating table, and then I was out.
Yeah.
I was like,
it happens fast.
Dude, yeah, some good stuff for sure. And so I remember waking up in the recovery room, and they're like, hey, like, you're done, and being just like so excited. I was like, you did it? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, you cut my head open? And they're like, yeah, man, like, you're good. I was like, seriously? I was so excited because I mean, I was high as a kite, but like, I felt myself.
Right.
And I remembered, yeah. And I remembered being like really, really nervous about that. And so, it was a pretty crazy experience as far as the surgery. I couldn't really walk for the first like week. Recovery, they put you on these steroids that help with the swelling. And dude, I was eating so much food, and I couldn't sleep because I was like insomnia medicine too. I was eating so much food, I was like throwing up while I was sleeping.
Wow.
I could not stop. Dude, I was ordering crumble cookie at like 10 o'clock at night. I was eating like entire bags of like tortilla chips, like anything. And it was for a week. My stomach hated me. And so that was a real interesting time, like the, you know, short-term recovery of the surgery. As we get into the long-term recovery, I had already made a decision that like, once I'm back to full health, like, we're doing another ultra, because like, at this point, like, it was really, really personal for me. I think when we go back to that moment on the boat when I kind of got, you know, handed a new one, I think I realized that, like, you know, when I say I want to do something, like, I'm going to do it. And I think that that's a super, it really is an important part of me and my life, and just doing what I say I'm going to do. And so I didn't know how long it was going to take to get to that moment, but, you know, by God, like, we were going to make it happen. And so I signed up for, Casey Klein, where she is, a good friend of mine. So she has signed up for this Antelope Canyon 50 miler. And so I had signed up for it at that time. I hadn't even ran. But I was like, this is a goal. This is something I can, like, you know, work towards. And dude, we started real, real slow. We started just walking. And I started, you know, just kind of like a mile a day, you know, mile every few days, and just really started slowly getting back to the point where, you know, I could be physical, and, like, physically be active.
You went from, I mean, from what I understand, you found out about this tumor, like, right before you were supposed to race. So you had 2 days?
Yeah, 2 days before.
So you had built up this incredible level of fitness because you were about to go run 62 miles, to have it all snatched away, to then have brain surgery, and then, you know, frankly, like, binge eat for a week, and really be back to square one. Which is insane. So, like, building back, you already started to talk about it, but how long was that build to get ready for Antelope Canyon?
Man, probably, I mean, 11 months.
Wow.
11 months from start to finish. Yeah. And dude, it wasn't, originally I was like, man, you know, we're going to get a coach. We're going to get, you know, we're going to get someone to really, like, help me get to where I need to be at. And I didn't do any of that. And I think a reason why is because when I was training for Rocky, like, I didn't have a coach. I was just running as much as I could.
Right.
And so for me, I think it was going to be, if I do this race, like, this is me. Like, this is 100% me. Not, I have a coach right now. I love all coaches, nothing against it, but it was just so personal to me. That it's like, I don't want to fail because maybe someone didn't, you know, help me as much as I thought they were. Like, I'm going to fail because of me.
Right.
And so, dude, my training, man, like, it was just, it was, I didn't have a program or anything. I was just, I'd run how I felt, you know, I'd push myself when I could. And so BPN's initiative, or their slogan for this year, is prove yourself right. And so it really just kind of worked out that, you know, they were able to send a videographer out there to film me do this race. And so myself, my girlfriend, a buddy, Eric, who works at BPO with me, dude, he said he signed up for that race 2 weeks before the race and was like, let's do it. And I was like,
wow,
all right, man, you're the real one. So, yeah, dude, so we get out there and we get out to Arizona, and I mean, being out there is amazing. It's so quiet. It's so beautiful. And it's so, like, vast. This race takes place on an Indian reservation. And so, you know, it starts at, like, 5 a.m. or so. And leading up to, like, you know, we did a shakeout run the day before. But, like, leading up to actual, like, race morning, I mean, dude, just, you know, make sure your drop bags are right. And running underneath that start line, you're like, all right, like, here we are. This is going to be a long day of my life. But, like, here we go. An amazing race. Tons of experiences I never was expecting. Weather was Not supposed to rain. It rained almost the entire day.
Wow.
Super muddy, super slippery. We were down in a canyon. We went down a 50-foot ladder down into a canyon, and there's a flash flood happening down there. So we were zigzagging these super narrow canyons, trying to get like taken out.
Wow.
Slipping and falling and running in the sand. It was just like the conditions were just like nothing that I expected. Kicked the crap out of my toes a handful of times was determined that they were gone because how bad that hurt. No, dude, no real issues with nutrition. Nutrition felt pretty on point. I was really happy with that. The interesting thing that happened was that morning, I pulled the classic, didn't charge my headlamp, so that died. But luckily, it was sunrise. Well, sunset. We thought we swapped out the right battery, but that battery hadn't been charged either. So we still had 12 miles to go, and it was dark. And my headlamp died, and then Eric, his headlamp ended up dying. So we finished the race with 8 miles left. We finished 8 miles on his cell phone light in the middle of
Wow.
Arizona. So, yeah, took me. I think a little over 14 hours. And one of the greatest feelings I've ever experienced. Just proud.
Yeah,
Man,
man.
just really proud of myself, which I feel like I'm not usually, but just really, really proud of myself. And it's such a good testament for hard things going forward. It's like, what's your excuse? You look what you've done.
Yeah,
So.
and also just like, man, no matter how down bad you feel like you might be, like there's a way out. And it's like it
Absolutely.
doesn't, you know, it might not be easy, the path might not be linear, but you know what you did, which is the walk-on mentality, is like you committed to something huge, something scary,
Yeah.
something different than you'd ever done, and you knew that it would take work, but you committed to that process, and the finish line sounds like it was unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that's
Unbelievable.
awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now, you know, are you still in the ultra space? Are you looking at any other races, or what's your relationship with it now?
So I was so coming obviously coming off of that race, I was very motivated. I was like, I want to do 100. And I didn't realize how burnt out I was from running. And I realized that because I was running so much when I was going to do the Rocky Raccoon, to then take a break and then go right into running and then do Antelope and then basically keep running, like I didn't really allow myself to time to just like recover. And so I still have an amazing coach right now, and right now we're trying to work on like my why. Like I love running, I really do. We're trying to figure out like what's my why for running. It's very easy to run in the past and find because of my brain stuff. But right now I'm like I've kind of hit a roadblock as far as like why am I doing these races? Like am I still trying to like find my limits? Am I still trying to and so I'm currently training for CIM in December. I'd like to break sub four. That's like a goal that I think would be really cool to do. But I'm also not really pushing it crazy hard. I've kind of stepped back a little bit. I am gonna start ramping it up pretty soon with the weather getting cooler. I ran all throughout summer, and I was wrecked, just absolutely wrecked. So I'm hoping these next few months we'll start ramping back up and get ready for CIM. And I don't have any ultras on the calendar right now, but never say never. That could change pretty quickly, but just right now focusing on CIM.
Yeah, man, and I think it's really important to take that time to recover and recharge and stay away from that burnout. I think having a why as to everything that you're doing is super valuable. So I'm glad that you're taking the time to really figure that out.
Yeah, no, it's super, super important.
So I always ask my guests if you could leave the audience with one piece of advice, any topic, whether career, endurance racing, fitness. you name it, what would be your advice?
That's a really good question. The thing that's kind of just coming to my mind, and I kind of talked about it, but it's okay to not be okay. And it is okay to talk to people. You know, men and women, we need people. We need to rely on people. And we need people to listen to us, and vice versa. Like, people, you know, want us to listen to them. So I just say, you know, if you're struggling with anything, it doesn't have to be depression. If you're struggling with, you know, anxiety or sadness or anger or frustration, like, talk to people.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, man. And most of the time people are, you know, dropping some fire advice about pursuing something big and crazy. But I think that advice is maybe even more fire because it's super important. So I appreciate you for saying that. And man, I can't thank you enough for the conversation. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you so much, man. Thanks for your listeners and thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
Absolutely. And to the listeners, thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of the Walk On Mentality Podcast, and we will see you on the next one.